Morning, Yekeli Tafin Sanhedrin is Mem Zayin. We are on Mem Vav Amud Beis, and we're discussing Kvura, the mitzvah of burial. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to bury. The Gemara described it yesterday. We learned it from somewhat of an unusual source, but we learned it from Mises Beis Din. When somebody is subject to execution, so the Torah says that you hang them, but you only hang them for a very short amount of time. The Mishnah described it yesterday as one person quickly puts it up, the other person quickly unties him, and so the hanging is done for just a moment in time. In fact, the Gemara yesterday pointed out that what we should do is we should try to orchestrate the burial in a way such that the execution should be done right before Shkiyas Nechama, and that way we're going to execute right before Shkiyas Nechama, hang him right before Shkiyas Nechama, and on time right before Shkiyas Nechama. So this is all by way of an introduction to the Gemara's discussion to that of Kvur, to that of burial. Not only is burial a chiyah for those people who were executed by Beis Din, but it's a chiyah for everybody, meaning everyone has a mitzvah of Kvur. And it has to be done right away. It shouldn't be delayed. The Mishnah's position is that if it's lechavan ha-mace, if it's for providing honor for the mace, so then you could do so. Sorry, then you could postpone it and delay it a little bit, without outside considerations, one should bury it as quickly as possible. And this prompted us to have a dialogue between Amoraim and Shvur Malka. Shvur Malka, one of the kings that comes up a number of times throughout the Gemara. He lived during the time of the Gemara. He lived during the time of the Amoraim. And he now has a conversation, a dialogue together with Rav Chama. So what we'll do is we'll start from the beginning of the dialogue. We started this already yesterday, but it's a good starting point. So, Amar Leh Shvur Malka LeRav Chama. It is in the Gemara on Mem Vav Amud Beis, towards the end of yesterday's daf. It is the last short line of the Amud. It's actually two lines. Amar Leh is the last two words of the line. So, Amar Leh Shvur Malka LeRav Chama Kvuros Min HaTorah Minayin. So where do we find this mitzvah of Kvur in the Torah? This is what Shvur Malka asks Rav Chama, Ishtek v'lo amr le'v'lo midi, and Rav Chama's response is nothing. He said nothing back. So Amr Rav Acha B'Yaakov, Imser Alma B'Yadei T'Tivshai. So now what you're doing is basically handing over to Shvur Malka the impression that we are all a bunch of idiots, meaning we can't answer a question like that, a simple question like that, right? Where is the mitzvah of Kvur in the Torah, and we don't have an answer for him? So D'Ibayla L'Mamar Ki Kavur. And why don't you just simply look at the parsha last week? Meaning it says, Ki Kavur, you're going to bury. So Del Avile Arad, the Gemara says, no, because I know what he's going to do with that pasuk. He's just going to simply say that the word Kavur over there means to prepare for the burial, means specifically put the Aron together. What about Tikbarenu? Meaning, okay, but look at it again. Same pasuk in last week's parsha, Tikbarenu, you should bury. So the Gemara says, Lo Mashmalei. So he says, look, I know for him, that's not going to do it for him. That pasuk to him does not give a clear indication that there is a mitzvah to bury. So the Gemara says, yeah, but look what we do all the time. We bury tzaddikim. Meaning, look in the Torah, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Meaning, they all received the burial in the Torah, Minhaga Ba'ama. So once again, he says, I know Shvur Malka is not going to accept that as an argument as well. He'll just simply deflect and defend, and they'll say, that's a minhag. Meaning, I'm not asking about a minhag, I'm asking about where's the source in the Torah that you have to bury. Mitikavre Akash Baruch Hu Moshe. Okay, but Akash Baruch Hu buried Moshe. So the Gemara says, Delolishanim Emenaga. So the Gemara says there too. The only thing that Akash Baruch Hu was doing was just maintaining the minhag. But it's a minhag. So Tashma v'saftu lo kol Yisrael v'kavru oso. So the Gemara says that this is in reference to Aviah. Aviah was the son of Yeravam. So it says that there was a Navi, Rashi brings down, the Navi was Achia Hashiloni, and the Navi was saying that this particular son of Yeravam was the only one worthy of a proper burial and a proper eulogy. So the Gemara says, V'saftu lo ko yisro v'kavru oso. So they eulogized him properly and they buried him. So once again, the Gemara says, D'lo lishanim imenhaga. And again, the Gemara deflects and the Gemara says, it's a minug. Meaning that's not a source that tells me that one has to bury. Lo yispadu v'lo yikabru. So l'domeim al p'nei adama yiyu. So the Gemara says, okay, but in Yirmiyahu we find that Rishayim were not subject to being buried, which means that in general they should be buried. So the Gemara says, d'lishtanim minhaga. But again, that just simply means that there's a deviation from the minhag. But again, it doesn't tell me that this is an ironclad source that one has to bury. So, right, an awkward ending to the discussion, but Rav Chama basically says, I know my audience. I know Shvarmaka wouldn't have accepted any of these answers as proper answers to the question. So where is Kfura found in the Torah? So Shvarmaka did not receive an answer, and Rav Chama said, and I have my reasons in terms of why I didn't cite any of these psukim you just cited. Ibailu Kfura Mishum Bizyunahu Mishum Kaparuhu. Gemara asked the following question. Now we in this room know that there is a mitzvah to bury, and the Gemara now wants to discuss the purpose of burial. What do we gain? What's the benefit of burial? So the Gemara here has two considerations. One, bizayim, meaning that if the person is not buried, the person is going to be suffering a terrible indignity, meaning the person is going to be left to decompose outside of the ground, and that's just a terrible indignity. That's bizayim. So maybe one reason that a person gains from being buried in the ground is to save themselves from the suffering from such a disgrace. Oh, mishum kaparahu. The Gemara says, well, maybe no. Maybe it's not just the avoidance of a negative condition, but maybe it's actually for a positive benefit. Burial in the ground. The Gemara later on this morning is going to be describing it as tzar dekivra. Right? In other words, the pain that the body has to go through and being underground is enough of a painful situation where it provides a kapara for the person. So which means to say that it's a positive benefit to the person being buried. So we have right now two possible reasons, or so to say, benefits of being buried. One, to save themselves to avoid bizayon, or two, to provide a kapara. Now the Gemara says, Amay nafkamina, the Gemara says, now over here, we could talk about halachic nafkaminas between these two reasons. Da'amar lo be'ina delikvur la'u gavra. So one nafkamina would be, let's say the person says, look, I don't want a burial. Meaning he's putting out his last wishes, and he says very clearly to the family, I don't want to be buried. Does he have the right to make such an argument? So, now if it's to save him from disgrace, and it doesn't just save him from the disgrace, it also saves the family from disgrace as well. So, lo kol kamine. It's not within his power to simply say to his family, look, I'd like to suffer the indignity, and I'd like all of you to suffer the indignity as well. A person cannot say that to the family. A person does not have the right to say that to the family. So, therefore, if a person wants to make the tzava that he does not want to be buried, it's not within his power. But if the whole purpose of burial is to provide a kapara for the individual, so ha amar lo bina kapara. Here, in this particular case, he has the ability to say, I don't want the kapara. Obviously, it would have been prudent to accept the kapara, but he doesn't want the kapara. Okay, so, can a person basically, it's a strange question, but really, the question is strange, but it really touches on what is the point of burial? What exactly are we trying to accomplish through burial? So, but the question now is, and the nafkamina would be, a person said he doesn't want a burial. Within his power to say that or not within his power to say that? And again, just to refresh, if it's a question of bizayon, he does not have the right to provide an embarrassment for him and for his family. If the issue is kapara, well, it's within his right. If he wants to pass on a kapara, he may do so. So my tashma mi de ikbar tzadike. So the Gemara says, well, let's discuss this in the context of what we've been discussing up until now. You notice that the tzaddikim were buried, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, v'yamar mishum kapara tzaddik la kapara tzriche. Now the Gemara says, do they need a kapara? But the Gemara's answer is they do need a kapara. Yechziv adam ein tzaddik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yechata. Pasuk in Kohelet says, everybody has chataim. Meaning even the tzaddikim amongst us, we are all human, we all are subject to the human condition, every one of us, obviously some less than others, but everyone has chataim. Everybody needs a kapara. So the Gemara says, so we have no proof from there. Tashma v'saftu lo kol Yisrael v'kavru osav. So the Gemara says, again, we go back to the Navi, we go to Malachim. Excuse me. And again, we're describing over here, Aviah, the son of Yerava. So the Gemara says over here, the other sons did not receive a burial. Only Aviah received a burial. The other sons of Yeravim did not. They were Rishayim. If the whole purpose over here is to provide a kapara, the Gemara says, why not? Meaning, bury them so that they can get a kapara. So the Gemara says, well, that's exactly the point. Meaning, Aviah was a tzaddik, therefore, he was entitled to a kapara. The other sons, however, were simply not entitled to a kapara, and that's exactly the point. So again, no proof over here whether the function of burial is to save Bizayon or to provide kapara. Again, the Gemara goes back to the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. So Yirmiyahu was describing regarding certain Rishayim that they were not going to be eulogized and they were not going to be buried. So delota avlu kapara. So the Gemara, again, it just simply says it could very well be that they're not going to be provided a burial so that they won't be provided a kapara, and that was by design. So again, the Gemara ends this question off with no resolution. What is the purpose of burial? So it's either going to be to save him and the family from disgrace or to provide a kapara. The Gemara discusses briefly. The Gemara does not resolve.
Would that be a great example of
yeah.
Just burial?
Okay, right, but we're right. The Gemara is seeking to understand why. What do we gain from the burial? And the Gemara leaves it unresolved. Okay, yeah. Ibailu hespeda yikara dechayava yikara deshachvehava. In concert with this question of burial, the Gemara now discusses the eulogy. What's the function of eulogy? So there's two possibilities for eulogizing. It either provides honor for the deceased or it provides honor for the family members. Now, of course, by the way, part of the answer could be a combination, meaning it could be both. Providing honor for both. But again, the Gemara over here discusses it more like a binary issue. It's either or. It's either going to be providing kapara for the family, not kapara, sorry, honor for the family, or it's going to be providing honor for the death, for dead lamai nafkamina. And the Gemara says, now, assuming this to be an either or issue, so the Gemara says, here's the following nafkamina. The amar lo tifsadu la ugavra. Let's say the guy, right before he dies, says, look, right, I'm a quiet individual. I love being a quiet individual. I love not being the center of attention, and what I'd prefer is after I die, I prefer no eulogy, meaning I'm not interested. So if the whole purpose of eulogizing is for him, he's clearly saying I don't want it. If it's for the surviving family members, so he doesn't have the right to say that. The Gemara says inami la fukimi yorshin, or the Gemara says as follows: let's say that after the person dies, he didn't say anything about the eulogy. But the family members are basically saying, look, eulogy, we're going to have to hire a rabbi. We're going to have to pay for it. We'd prefer not to pay for it. So the Gemara says this would be another nafkamina. So if it is for the person who died, so and the person who died said, I'm not interested in a eulogy, so the family members don't have to pay for it. If, on the other hand, he says, I want a eulogy, and the family members after he died said, you know what, I know he wanted one, but that's money out of our pocket. No, thank you. So again, if it's for honoring themselves, the family members, they have the right to forego. If it's, however, for the deceased, well, the deceased wanted it, or we'll assume the deceased wanted some form of eulogy, and so therefore they're going to have to pay for it out of pocket. Okay, so next question of the Gemara, slightly different than the previous one, obviously, but a question of what is the function of eulogy? Who is the main beneficiary of the eulogy that's being given? So Tashma v'yavo Avram l'spor l'sarah v'liv kosa. So the Gemara starts off with Avram and Sarah, where Avram provides a eulogy for Sarah. I amart mishem mikar dechayuhu mishem mikar deAvram mashulu sarah mashulu l'sarah. So the Gemara says, so here I don't quite frankly understand. Meaning, let's go back to the scene. Sarah dies. Avram was away. Avram, we know, was by Kedis Yitzchak. So, but, and what do? They postpone the burial of Sarah. And what the Gemara now is imagining or surmising is that the burial of Sarah is being postponed so that Avram can come back and to provide a eulogy. So, now, to be quite honest, part of this Gemara I don't understand, because seemingly, if you just read the simple storyline, there was nowhere to bury Sarah, meaning Avram had to go out of his way to buy a burial plot for Sarah. So admittedly, I don't perfectly understand the Gemara over here, as there seems to be other considerations in terms of why Sarah's burial was delayed. Okay, and that's just an open admission on my part. But, again, let's just work within the Gemara. Let's assume now that the delay of the burial had to do with the eulogy, which is not what the Gemara is assuming. So the Gemara says, look, if the whole purpose is that it provides it provides comfort for the deceased, so then I understand. So then we'll delay the burial so that we can provide a eulogy. But if it's for Avraham, if the whole purpose of the eulogy is for Avraham, so you're going to delay a burial so that Avraham himself could be honored through Sarah? So the Gemara says, Sarah gufa nichala ki echne miyakar ba Avraham. So the Gemara says, no, but Sarah would have wanted that. Meaning the honor that's afforded to Avraham as a result of the eulogy, so that's something that Sarah would have wanted. So the Gemara says, so therefore, yes. In other words, she would have wanted the postponement of the burial so that Avraham would receive such honor. I assume the timeline was is that in other words, we know from Rashi over there that she died during the Akedah.
And they rose and went together to Beer Sheva, and Avraham lived in Beer Sheva.
Okay, fine. That all that may be accurate and true, but in other words, in terms of when she actually died, so the timeline is again the Gemara assumes this, Rashi and Chumash says it. The timeline is that she died during the Akedah. And that, right. Okay. So, and the Gemara is assuming right now that her funeral was postponed until Avraham came back. And now why? So the Gemara says, because of the eulogy. And again, I'm pointing out that there are other considerations. There was nowhere to bury her. But again, the Gemara is assuming that's because of the eulogy. So if it's to honor Sarah, the Gemara says, I understand that. But if it's to honor Avraham, so that's a little bit difficult. But the Gemara says, okay, but it's difficult. But let's assume that Sarah would have wanted it. And the Gemara says, and we will assume that. Tashma. Once again, we go back to the son of Yeravam Avia, where the Torah says that he will receive a eulogy and they'll bury. So the Gemara says, now, if the eulogy was for the family members, so Avia was good, but the family was not. And the Gemara says, and I don't understand, and the eulogy is going to be provided for a family that's not deserving of such honor? So the Gemara says, Nichlu tzadika dimiakrabu inshe. So the Gemara says, yeah, but again, a similar idea. Meaning, the family may not be somebody who's worthy of delivering the eulogy, of receiving the honor through the eulogy, but the Gemara says, but we can assume, though, that the tzaddik, in this case, Avia, would be happy with such a situation. So the Gemara says, so once again, we have not resolved the question of who is the main function of the eulogy is for the deceased or for the family, for the surviving family. Tashma. Again, the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. So lo nichal tzaddik demiyakar b'rishi. So the Gemara says over there as well. In other words, even though the person was a rasha, and even if the purpose of the eulogy was not for the deceased, but for the surviving family, but the surviving family just simply does not find honor in eulogizing somebody who was a rasha. So the Gemara says once again, it is not compelling at this point in time whether the eulogy is a functioning as a way of honoring the deceased or the surviving family. Tashma. V'shalom tamus uve misrafos avosecha hamlachim harishonim ashiru lefanecha ken yisrafu lach v'have adon yisavtu lach. The Gemara over here, towards the end of Yirmiyahu, so the Gemara over here cites a pasuk, and Yirmiyahu describing prior to the death of Tzidkiyahu, he says, do not worry, you will be properly eulogized. Now the Gemara says, now if the whole function of the eulogy is to provide honor for the family members, so how is this going to be beneficial to Tzidkiyahu? Like, in other words, how is Tzidkiyahu going to be made felt better by hearing, oh, don't worry, you're going to be eulogized and your family is going to receive honor? In other words, wouldn't it make more sense to say that the whole purpose of the eulogy is for the deceased, and that's why this is comforting for Tzidkiyahu? So the Gemara's answer over here is, so the Gemara says that, okay, no, we can make the argument that really the purpose of the eulogy is for the survivors, not for the one who died. And what the Navi was saying to Tzidkiyahu was, just like others are going to be honored through you, you're going to be honored through other people as well. In other words, it's life is cyclical, and yeah, just... other people will be honored through you just like you were honored through other people. Fine. So once again, at this juncture of the Gemara, it is left unresolved, the function of eulogizing. Is it for the deceased or is it for the surviving members? In other words, it doesn't have to be binary. But the Gemara is assuming it's binary, just simply because if it was, so then it would make practical halachic nafkaminis, which the Gemara earlier discussed. Tashma, we are on the very top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, continuing in this very discussion. So, Nivze Be'einav Nim'as, Pasuk in Tehillim, a description of who? So, it's not identified in the Sefer itself, but the Gemara brings down a drash, and that is Zechizkiel Melech Yehuda. So, this Pasuk of Nivze Be'einav Nim'as, right, it was treated lightly in his eyes, he was disgusted. So, a reference to Chizkiel, who we know by Chizkiel, Girat Samasaviv, Al Mita Shel Chavalim. So he dragged the bones of his fathers on a bed of thorns. Quick reminder, Chizkiel, who was one of the last kings of Yehuda, well, we just got done discussing the last king of Yehuda, and that's Zedekiah. But now we're talking about Chizkiel. But Chizkiel was surrounded by Rishayim. His father was a Rasha, his son was a Rasha. His father was Achaz, his son was Menashe. So as to provide an atonement for his father, who was such a Rasha, was an Ovid of Avodah Zarah and caused others to be Ovid of Avodah Zarah. So one of the things that Chizkiyahu did is he took the bones of his father and he dragged them on a bed of thorns. Now, admittedly, somewhat questionable behavior that a son is doing to the remains of his father. The Mishnah in Psachim in the fourth Perek discusses whether this was appropriate or inappropriate. And the Gemara, if you remember the Mishnah over there, cites six actions that Chizkiyahu did. Three of them were sanctioned and three of them were not sanctioned. This one fell under the category of sanctioned. Right? The Chachamim did give a haskama to this kind of behavior. Now the Gemara points out, Im Mishum Dechayu Maitam Kiyechad Detavlu Kapar Lavua. So the Gemara says, now, if it's for the survivors, so if the whole purpose of eulogizing, now I understand over here we're not talking about a eulogy, I do understand that. But the idea of the Gemara is that if what you're doing after the person dead is providing honor for those who are living, so my time. So the Gemara says, so what would be the purpose of doing this? So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, well, Chizkiyahu over here was doing this, even though it's obviously not providing honor for the family, but there's another consideration, which I already pointed out, and that is to provide a kapara for his father. So the Gemara says, so over here, obviously this is not providing honor for the family, but it's obviously giving a kapara for his father. So the Gemara says, well, in other words, so to provide kapara for his father, so he's going to debase the Jewish people in such a manner? Yisrael gufay nichalu demechli kara legabe. So the Gemara says, the Jewish people also would approve of such an action. Such an action is going to be providing a sense of redemption for the family of Chizkiyahu. And so the Jewish people would be fine with this as well. And so the Gemara assumes that even if this was a function of kapara, not only would Achaz be happy with it, Chizkiyahu would be happy with it, but the Jewish people would be happy as well. Tashma Amar Lam Altas Paduni Ba Yaros. The Gemara over here now fast forwards to the death of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, right? Years later, centuries later. The death of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, which the Gemara in Ksuvas records in detail, right? Rashi over here cites the Gemara in Ksuvas as Daf Kuf Gimel. And when Rabbi Yehuda Anasi dies, so part of his sava, part of his instructions before his death, is that I do not want to be eulogized in the small towns. Now, what that means is as follows. Rashi points out over here, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi died in Sipari, and he was going to be buried in Beit She'arim. Okay, some travel one to another. And basically now the coffin is going to be making the trek from Sipari to Beit She'arim, and what would have happened had Rabbi Yehuda Anasi not given any instructions is that they would have stopped along the way, even the small little towns, in order to eulogize Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was the leader of the Jewish people, and so presumably they would have stopped at every little town in order to eulogize. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi's instructions were, don't do that, but rather, just eulogize me in the big towns. Now, as far as the small towns are concerned, what are they expected to do? They're expected to go to the big towns and participate in a larger gathering for the eulogy. So the Gemara says, so what do you see over here? The eulogy is now providing a kavod for whom? So presumably over here for the dead. Meaning, if the whole purpose of the eulogy was for the surviving, so what difference would it make for Rav Yehuda Anasi if they all eulogized in one large area or in a small area? Should it make a difference? Meaning, obviously, this is going to make a difference for Rav Yehuda Anasi, even though it's post-mortem. But in other words, it's prior to the burial. So it seems to be that the function of the eulogy is for the mace, not for the chayim. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Kasavali tiakra ba Yisrael tfei. So the Gemara says, no. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's cheshbon, says the Gemara, is that this is going to provide more honor for the Jewish people. Meaning the fact that they're gathering in a larger gathering, so that provides more cover for the Jewish people. And so again, one can maintain the position that the purpose of a hesped is for the chayim, not for the mace. Right, correct, right, correct, correct. It's more right. It could be covered at Torah as well. Absolutely. Tashma. Helin l'chvado l'havi lo'ar metachrichin eino over alav. We go now to our Mishnah. And, right, part of the reason why this discussion over here is because our Mishnah seemingly is weighing in on this issue. Our Mishnah says you could delay the burial when? When you need tachrichin, when you need an aron. If it's to provide honor for the mace, you delay the burial. My la l'chvod shel mace, and now presumably it's for cover of the mace. So the Gemara says, lo l'chvod shel chai. So the Gemara says, not necessarily. Once again, you can maintain the argument that this is to provide honor for the surviving members of the family. Mishim chvod shel chai, mavis l'mace. So the Gemara says, and really, and you're going to delay the burial only to honor the surviving family members? And the Gemara says, yeah, that's correct. Ki amarach manelo salin nevas olait stamir de talui dies baby Zion avahacha kevin delays baby Zion lo. So the Gemara says, look, what did we just learn yesterday's daf? That if somebody's hanging, so you hang him and you take him down right away. And the reason why you do that is because that's a bizayon. That would be a disgrace. But over here, all we're doing is just delaying the burial. Now we shouldn't be delaying the burial, but it's not an active bizayon. It's not like someone being hanged like we described in yesterday's daf. Over here, we're just simply passively pushing off the burial so that there would be an aron, so that there would be tachrichin. But again, we could still argue the case that it's for the chayim, not for the mace. Tashma. Helin l'chvado l'shamei alav ayaros avilo mikonanos avilo aron v'tachrichin eino avar alav shekol ha'osa eino elo l'chvado shameis. So here the Gemara quotes a brisa, and the brisa is similar to what we just said, that you could delay the funeral for the providing of the aron, the tachrichin, here allow people to gather together, to hire the mekononos, those are the professional women who wailed at the funeral. So all this, and the brisa ends off with the words, eino ela l'chvado shameis. The brisa says very clearly that the whole purpose of this is to provide honor for the mace, not for the chayim. So once again, now we have the brisa, and it seems pretty clear from the brisa that this is an honor for the mace, not for the chayim. Again, an interpretation of the brisa could go like this. Really, it's to honor the surviving members of the family. And even though you may have suspected that it's somewhat degrading to the mace, it's not degrading to the mace. And therefore, you could postpone it in order to provide honor for the chayim. Admittedly, it's not the simple pshat of the brisa, but the Gemara says, but you could say that. Tashma. Rabbi Nasan Amar Simon Yafal Amesh Nefrayim Yimena La'achemisa. A good sign after somebody's dead is that he had to suffer some sort of indignity after he died. The Gemara here gives a number of examples. Meshalo Nisban. Let's say he did not receive a proper eulogy. Velo Nikvar. Or he did not receive a proper burial. Oshe Chaygaraso. Or his body was attacked by animals after post-mortem. Oshayu gusham mezafim amitaso. Or it was just a downpour during the burial. Zeu siman yafa lameis. So this is a good sign for the mace, meaning that the mace now in one of these indignities has experienced an additional kapara, and therefore provides a good sign for the mace. So the Gemara says, shmamina yikar deshachvehu shmamina. So the Gemara says, clearly over here, under one of the examples of an indignity suffered by the mace, is that he didn't receive a proper eulogy. And the Gemara says, then it's a good sign for the mace, not for the chayim. So here it's pretty clear, there doesn't seem to be another way to explain this brisa. The purpose of eulogizing is specifically to provide a kavod and a nechama for the mace himself. Lo Yukovrim. We're right in the middle of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, And we are continuing now in the Gemara. And v'chol kach lama. So we're now describing the Mishnah vis-a-vis that those who are executed by Beis Din are not going to be buried in his family plot. But if you remember what we learned yesterday, we'll be buried in a designated area in Beis Din, right next to Beis Din, where there are actually going to be two burial plots. One for those who are executed either through Sreifa or through Skila, and a second one who for those who are executed through Hereg or Chenek. So the Gemara says, but they're not going to be buried in a regular family plot. And the Gemara here provides a very simple reason. Lefi shein kovrin rasha et tzaddik. You do not bury a rasha next to a tzaddik. Da'am revacha b'rabbi chenem inayin shein kovrin rasha et tzaddik. Shein amrav yuhim kovrim ish v'hinei ra'usa gedud v'yashlichu asa ish bekever elisha. So the Gemara over here describes a Navi in Malachim where the Navi, they were burying somebody who was a rasha. The Navi itself does not identify who this person was. Rashi over here, I'm imagining through the Midrashim, identify that who was buried next to Elisha already was dead at this point in time. Elisha was already buried. And it just happens to be, it was a result of this other funeral that was taking place. The people got scared off by an army. Whatever the details were. In other words, but this person who just happened to have been buried next to Elisha, so he was a Rasha, Rashi describes him as being a Navi Sheker. Okay, in any event. So what happens? So the Navi goes on to describe, Vayiga ish batzamos Elisha, Vayichi vayikama raglav. So the Navi describes over there that because this person was buried right next to Elisha, and because the body of this Rasha touches the body of Elisha, so the body gets up and moves spots. Now, where exactly this body went to, so we don't have a description of that in the Navi, although the Gemara in a moment is going to be describing that. The purpose of the Gemara bringing the story down is to bring a proof that a tzaddik cannot be buried next to a rasha, and here, Elisha being the tzaddik, this person being a Navi Sheker being a rasha, and it's proof positive. In other words, this person actually experienced Tchias HaMesim so that he wouldn't be buried next to Elisha. Huh? This is in the Navi. It's in the Navi.
Well, the right is you should be buried next to the tzaddik.
You should not. No, that right. It was only because of happenstance. And the Gemara assumes not, but I hear you. So Amalei Rav Papa V'Dilma Le'ikum V'Hina Pishnaim B'Ruchacha Eli. Gemara says, wait 1 second. You can make another argument in terms of why it is that the Tchias HaMesim was performed in this situation. Elisha was promised that he was going to be twice the Navi that Eliyahu was. Eliyahu did Tchias HaMesim once in his lifetime. So Elisha needed to do Tchias HaMesim twice in order to fulfill the promise of you being twice the Navi of Eliyahu. So maybe over here, this post-mortem Tchias HaMesim that Elisha performed was just simply a fulfillment of the promise. So Amalei Hachi Aina D'Tanya Raglav Amadu L'Beis Olo Halach Ella, so the Gemara says, I hear you, but that can't be the argument over here. Because what happened to the person after this person experienced Tchias HaMesim? Says the Gemara, we have a tradition, that what happened over here is that he got up, he moved spots, and he went back down again. Meaning, he didn't really experience Tchias HaMesim, he just simply, enough life to get him to move spots. But that's it. And if the whole purpose over here was to provide a Tchias HaMesim, so one can imagine that at least let him live a little bit. Let him go back home. Let him be with his family. But by virtue of the fact that he just moved spots, this wasn't for the function, the purpose of Tchias HaMesim. So Elavayina Pishnaim Yechimishkach Allah. So the Gemara says, okay, but there was a promise made to Elisha that he was going to be twice the Navi of Eliyahu. Where's the second Tchias HaMesim that Elisha did? At least we don't see it in the Navi itself. So the Gemara says, Mashkachala de'achye, Amalei Rav Yochanan, Shiri peit saras na'aman, Shishkula kemes, Tichzival nati kemes. So the Gemara says, well, he did cure Na'aman of his saras. We do know we have a Masorah, that someone with saras is considered like somebody who's dead. It's not only a Masorah, it's a pasuk regarding Miriam. Miriam, when she received saras, so Aaron pleaded with Moshe, please don't, let's not treat her like the dead. Meaning because someone with saras is compared to like somebody who died. Ukishem. She ain't kovin rasha. It's a tzadikach in kovin rasha. Chamor, it's a rasha kal. So the Gemara says, so now that we've established that you cannot have a tzaddik buried next to a rasha, and vice versa, you can also not have a minor rasha being buried next to a major rasha. So that's why, right, we work with the assumption that the one who was given skila is a more of a rasha than someone who just received chenek. And again, if we just thought about it for a moment, like, we can hear it. Meaning, who's receiving skila? Ovid Avodah Zarah. Megadev. Right? Those are, if you will, high order averus. Someone receiving chenek, right, adultery. Right? Obviously not condoning, but just simply saying, on the spectrum, not the extent of an avera of Ovid Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, Velitkan arba kavaros, so the Gemara says, fine. So, but why are there only two cemeteries behind the Beis Din? Meaning, if the idea is that we should segregate the various avaryanim and not have the major Rishayim being buried with the minor Rishayim, so we know that the Dalamis is Beis Din, so shouldn't there be now four burial plots behind the Beis Din? So the Gemara says, Shnei Kvaros Gemara Gemirala. So the Gemara just simply says, look, it's Halach L'Moshe Misinai. Meaning, this is the tradition that we have, that the four are going to be divided into two categories. Sreif and Skila are in one, Harig and Chenek are in the other, and the Gemara just simply says, and that's the Masorah that we have.
Right.
Yes.
Then taken out of burial after their Kippur in the ground in those areas, they're buried back with their families.
Right.
So would that then indicate that there's a special atonement that they're going through?
Very good, very good. The Gemara is going to make that point in just a little bit. Okay, Amar Ulam Rav Yochanan. Seemingly, we are totally now off topic. We are not totally off topic, although for the moment we are. But you'll see how the Gemara is going to weave this back into our discussion. Rav Yochanan says the following: a person eats chalev. Chalev is the forbidden fats of an animal, right? It's the hard fats that are connected to some of the organs of the animal. So those are usur. In fact, they're so usur to eat that it's not just malchus. It's not just a lav. I mean, it is. But on top of that, it's an issur kares, right? If someone were to eat the chalev of an animal, so he's subject to the kares penalty. If a person does a bishogeg, so because it's a kares penalty, so if he does a bishogeg, he has to bring a karban chata. So, a person ate chalev bishogeg. So, inadvertently, right, to just slipped his mind, whatever, he sat down and he ate chalev. Right, the, used to be back in the good old days, I know this is funny what I'm about to say, but it's true, used to be back in the good old days, so the fries that were made in McDonald's, so they used to be fried not in vegetable oil, but they used to be fried in chalev. Meaning they took the tallow of the animal and they used to fry them in lard, right? But meaning like tallow, meaning like real, like the hard striated fats of the animal. So fine. So right. It used to be a time where if you ate the fries at McDonald's, it's not just eating tarfus, it's chiv kares. Okay. So back then. Now it's just tarfus. Now it's just a lav. Okay. So let's say a person does so inadvertently, and now he's chayav karban chatas, and then what happens? So Rav Yochanan says, and then the person becomes a mumar, right? Becomes a total rejecter of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, of the Torah. He goes off the reservation. Now here's what you need to know in order to understand and appreciate the Gemara. Somebody who's Hamer Das, somebody who goes off the reservation religiously, so he cannot bring a karban. Right, we have drashas, the Gemara brings down drashas. All we need to know in order to understand the Gemara is you cannot bring a karban in a state of being a mumar. So, follow now the progression. So, he ate chalev inadvertently. He then set aside a karban. He then leaves the reservation. And now he comes back onto the reservation. So now there was a point in time where the karban was disqualified. And this is a classic discussion the Gemara has time and again, and that is dichui. So now that the karban had a temporary suspension of being offered, is that temporary suspension, can it be reinstated or cannot be reinstated? Yes or no? This is a classic discussion. This is a discussion of dichui etzel karbanos. Rav Yochanan's position is very clear, and the Gemara here articulates it. Done. A temporary suspension is a permanent suspension, and it cannot be reinstated. Right? Now, the Gemara says it the same, but in the second case, the temporary suspension was due to a momentary lack of sanity. Momentarily, the man becomes insane. And again, during that period of time, he can't bring the carbon because he doesn't have any das to do so. So again, Rav Yochanan is making the same point. Even though it was a temporary suspension of the carbon, but a temporary suspension, however, becomes a permanent suspension. Utsrich, and now the Gemara says, now both of these halachas are needed to have been articulated. Look, in the case where he was Hamer Das, so that is leaving the reservation based on his own volition. He decided to leave the reservation. However, in the case of the insanity, that was beyond his control. He didn't want to become insane. He didn't decide to become insane. That just simply happened. It organically happened. So you could have struck a distinction between the cases. And you can also argue in the other direction as well. You see, in the case of insanity, so you become insane, again, not your choice, but you become sane, again, that's also not your choice. But leaving the reservation, religiously leaving the reservation, you could at any point in time come back, meaning that's within your control. It's biyado. And so you can make the argument that yes, you left the reservation, but you came back on your own accord. And so therefore, that should reinstate the status of the carbon. Again, you can make that argument, and tzricha. And so that's why Rav Yochanan has to say the statement in both cases, that in both cases, a temporary disqualification becomes a permanent disqualification. Amar Rav Yosef af anami tanina. So the Gemara says, Rav Yosef says, look, I'm going to prove that this is in fact so. I believe that Rav Yochanan is right, and I have a case study that shows that he's right in the following manner. We're talking about the city of an Ir Hanidachas over here, where, as we've discussed just recently, all the possessions of the Ir Hanidachas is brought into the center of the town and is destroyed. And the Gemara now is going to be discussing what, and the people themselves are put to death through Mises Beis Din. What if there were any carbonists in the city? Which I know kind of is strange, admittedly. Meaning this is a city which the principal people in the city are dedicated to Avodah Zarah. I know it's a little bit funny that there are carbonists just lying around in the city. Okay, but again, we're focusing more on the conceptual than we are on the practical. So the Gemara says, "Ayuba kachim mizbeach." I'm sorry, kachim mizbeach emusa kachim bedekabayis yipadu. If it was an animal dedicated to the mizbeach, so that animal is going to be put to death. If you have kache bedekabayis, so that could be redeemed. Vehavinan ba amaya musu kevin de ikal havile kapar velisku lagavoa. So the Gemara says, "Well, let's think this through. The animal now was dedicated to be brought on the Mizbeach. What's the problem? The owner right now is an Oved Avodah Zarah. But the owner of the animal is going to be killed by Beis Din. And when the owner is killed by Beis Din, hasn't that person received a kapara? And so now, why don't we say that yes, the animal had a temporary suspension, but since its owner received a kapara, now the owner is reinstated, although admittedly the owner is no longer alive. But that's just simply a detail. But now the owner went through a state of being temporarily disqualified, and then through the Mises Beis Din and through the kapara he received, is now at least the carbon should be reinstated. And why is the carbon not reinstated? Because of Rav Yochanan. Because a temporary suspension is equivalent to a permanent suspension. So lav mishum damin er hovin ischa yitzcha. So this seems to be a good proof for Rav Yochanan. The Gemara says it's not necessarily a good proof for Rav Yochanan. The Gemara says no, because over here, it's not that he himself reformed. It's that Beis Din put him to death. And right now, for now, the Gemara is making the argument he doesn't receive a kapara if Beis Din puts him to death. So the Gemara says, well, I'm sorry, didn't he Rav Shmaya? Yachla filo pirsho avosa midarchit zibor yitama, tamalam rebe amav, v'osem maisa amav. We know that a Kohen becomes tummy for a family member. If in the event that a family member dies, a Kohen has the right and mitzvah to be mitami for the family member, but that's only if the family member died while being on the reservation. If, however, he left the reservation, the Kohen is not mitami. So Amalei Rava Mika Midames Narag Mitoch Risho Lemes Mitoch Risho. So the Gemara says, okay, but in the case that you just brought down, regarding the Kohen and his, let's say, for example, his father, who dies. But we're that's talking about dying a natural death. That is not a kapara. Over here, we're talking about being put to death by Beis Din. You don't see the difference? Meis mitoch risho kem dechi orche kamayis lo have le kapara. Nerek mitoch risho kem delav ki orche mayis have le kapara. So the Gemara says, I can easily make a distinction between somebody who dies a natural death versus somebody who was killed by Beis Din. Someone who kills by Beis Din, such an unusual death, there you can make a very easy argument, a very simple argument, that such an individual is going to receive a kapara. Quoting from the 79th parak of Tehillim, the Gemara notes, "My avadecha, my chasidecha." There's a description over here of both chasidim and avadim. What is that? So, lav chasidecha, chasidecha, mamash avadecha, anachta mechavidina, demikara kevin de vekevin de ekel kari le avadecha. So it must be that chasidecha referring to people who were righteous individuals, and the avadecha, the servants, are people who are not necessarily good. In fact, just the opposite, they were rishayim. But they received the Mises Beis Din, and through the Mises Beis Din that they received a kapara. So the Gemara says, so don't you could make that argument. So the Gemara says, yeah, you can make that argument, but on the other hand, not necessarily. So Amalei Abaye, Mika Medames, Haruge, Malchus Haruge Beis Din. So the Gemara says, look, if you're killed by the government, that's different than being killed by Beis Din. Look, if you're killed by the Malchus, if you're killed by the local government, most probably they killed you for reasons that you didn't deserve. So there, if you undergo a Misa Mishun, if you go through undergo an unusual death and an unjustified death, that for sure is a kapara. But if Beis Din puts you to death, it's putting you to death because you deserved it. Magialach. And so the Gemara now is arguing that's not necessarily kapara. So Kevin de Shlobadinka Mikla have a kapara. Haruge Basin, Kevin de Bedinka Mikla, lo have the kapara. Teda, did not. And the Gemara says, and I think this is true because, again, let's go back to our Mishnah. Lo, you coffin osov, bikivros avosov. So he is not buried in the family plot. Isakadacha Kevin de Ikla, have the kapara, likvaru, miso, kvaru. I'm sorry, likvaru. So the Gemara says, well, if the death of Basin provides a kapara, so then immediately what should happen to Mises Beis Din, to the Chayve Mises Beis Din? He should go right to the family plot. But he doesn't. He's buried in a cemetery off to the side. So the Gemara says, clearly the death, when Beis Din puts somebody to death, that doesn't immediately provide a kapara. So the Gemara says, Misu Kvur Bi'inan. So the Gemara simply says, yeah, but you know what? No. Let's go back to the argument that he will receive a kapara. It just happens to be that it's an incomplete kapara, and it only becomes completed when he has Mises Beis Din coupled with the actual kvura itself. Okay, let's quickly recap what we've seen so far today, and tomorrow we'll pick it up from this very point in the Gemara. Okay, the first question the Gemara dealt with is, where's the source of kvura in the Torah? So, kavur tikbarenu, meaning it comes from the parsha of the Mises Beis Din. The Chayve Mises Beis Din. Right, Shvur Malka wasn't ready to hear that as an answer, but that's the answer. What is the purpose? What is the function of burial? Is it so that the family is saved from Bizayon, or is that the person himself who's being buried is going to receive a kapara? The Gemara addressed that also in the beginning of this morning's shiur. The Gemara left that question unresolved. Hespeid, a eulogy. Who is the beneficiary? Who is the primary beneficiary of the eulogy? Is it the mace, or is it the chaim, or is it the surviving family members? The Gemara discussed that, but the Gemara on this concluded that the primary beneficiary of the eulogy is the mace, is the one who died. Then the Gemara discussed the requirement of segregating in terms of burial. The tzaddikim are not to be buried next to rishayim, and the rishayim kalim should not be buried next to the rishayim chamurim. The Gemara says there, in theory, should be four burial plots behind the Beis Din for the Dalet Mises Beis Din. But the Gemara says, but Gemara Gemira, we just simply have a tradition that that's not the case. And then the Gemara went into a lengthy tangent based on Rav Yochanan's statement regarding somebody whose carbon was temporarily disqualified, but then reinstated. So what do we say regarding the Dichui? Is his carbon going to be reinstated? To that, the Gemara's response was, We could seemingly bring in a case study from Mises Beis Din, from the fact that Beis Din, that when somebody's killed by Beis Din, so his karban should be offered. The Gemara tried to deflect, but the Gemara ends up saying, "No, you're right. That the that he really does receive a kapara by being put to death by Beis Din, and why not and then allow his karban to be offered?" So then we could now support Rav Yochanan's statement that since it was pushed off temporarily, it will be permanently pushed off.